In this part of Focus 580, we'll be talking with one of the editors of a major new work recently published, a work of women's history and scholarship. It's the Routledge International Encyclopedia of Women, which looks at conditions of women around the world. It provides articles region by region on many different issues, including feminist movements, women's education, healthcare, and much more. The guest this morning, Sherris Cramer, was for a number of years a member of the faculty here at University of Illinois. She has published many books and articles dealing with communication, gender, and technology. At the moment, she's a visiting professor for the Center for the Study of Women in Society at the University of Oregon. One of the things that she was involved in here at University of Illinois was putting together a model program that was called Women, Information Technology, and Scholarship, often referred to by its initials, WITS, W-I-T-S, that was designed to try to help women faculty and staff members to give them computing support and support for each other to involve women in determining the technology priorities for the university. And she's joining us this morning by telephone to talk about the International Encyclopedia of Women. Questions certainly are welcome. 333-9455 is the telephone number here in Champaign-Urbana. So if you're local, use that number. We do, of course, have the toll-free line. That's good. Anywhere you can hear us, around Illinois, Indiana, any place that signal will travel, we'll pay for the call. That's 800-222-9455. So again, 333-WILL and toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Professor Cramer, hello.
Good morning.
Thanks for talking with us today.
I'm enjoying being here. It's good to be back on campus.
Well, it's good to have you back. I'm sure that there you have many friends here who would appreciate hearing your voice. How long was this work in progress?
Too long. It's been about a dozen years since we started plans. At the time, we thought that we could do it in 4 years.
Hmm. And how many people, all told, were involved in the effort?
Oh, we have a cast of 1,000. There were more than 800 contributors, and then all the other people involved making recommendations, helping with editing, topic editors that did so much in constructing the architecture of the book.
Hmm. What need were you trying to fill, and was there indeed really nothing else extant like this?
Nothing. And we realized in the late 1980s that there had been many years now of feminist scholarship, and yet when people went to reference works, you couldn't find this in one easily accessible place. And certainly there was nothing international.
And I guess that's what I really was interested in, whether in fact that this was, it was an issue of wanting to have a, in a sense between, I know it's more than one volume, but in a sense between two covers, this information gathered together, or whether in fact there is material here that it's not just a matter of having it all together in one place. There is material that really doesn't, it actually doesn't exist anyplace else.
That's interesting, because when you pull it together, it is indeed new material. And, you know, we've just gotten one of our first reviews from one of the library reference services. And I was just delighted that they said this qualifies as a browsing book. And, you know, I think that people will indeed be able to open it up and find that they can read and read about things that they had no idea.
It puts me in mind of a book that you were involved in that I know we talked about a long, long time ago, the Feminist Dictionary.
That's right.
Which took the form of a dictionary, but it was one of those books that people have done this before. They have used that as a kind of a structure to write what is essentially a piece of social commentary.
Yeah.
And that also is a browsing book. And so I can understand
how Paula Treichler and I did that.
Indeed. And So I can see how indeed this would be one of the same things that you could use if there was something in particular that you're interested in. You can go and look for a particular entry, but it could also be the kind of thing that one could pick up and page through, and when something caught your interest, then just simply read up on that thing.
That's the intent, yes.
Yeah. So is this? I would expect that perhaps the prime audience for this would be libraries and research institutions?
Yes, I mean we hope that it'll be in all public libraries, high school libraries, certainly all academic libraries, and we're also finding that individual scholars are also interested in it as a purchase for their own library.
Mm-hmm. This is such an enormous sort of undertaking. When you think about everything that one could put into something like this, how did you even go about thinking about what it was that you wanted to include?
Yes, we were very fortunate. We've gone through a number of publishers as the publishing world has changed. But the first publisher that approached us said, look, we're budgeting $1 million. You tell us how you think this should be constructed. And so that was wonderful freedom to try to figure out how to do such a thing. And what we did initially, because, you know, Dale Spender's from Australia, I'm from the U.S., how do you make this international? We began by having two international conferences to get advice before we did any planning of our own. And I remember the first conference we had, women from quite a number of countries, and they kept saying, well, what did you have in mind? They kept thinking that we had a structure in mind that we wanted confirmation for. And what we really wanted was, you know, how do you start dividing up the world? What topics need to be included? And eventually they figured out that there really wasn't a prior organization, and did a great deal of work in that conference in trying to structure such a work.
Mm-hmm. And it did. You do have contributors, indeed, from all over the world, from Europe, from Africa, from
about 70 countries, and certainly every continent other than Antarctica.
And dealing with areas including, here's the list, arts and literature and culture and communications and economics and education and health and religion and science and technology. It's a very wide range of subject matter.
Yes, and what's important there is that what we did is ask each of those areas, those broad areas. In the end, the encyclopedia is in alphabetical order, but those areas you just mentioned, they each had a topic editor, someone who is a specialist. For example, the culture and communication is Angie Valdivia from the UIUC Institute of Communication Research. Mm-hmm. And Peace and Violence is Eveline Arcade from the French department there. You know, both, you know, people who knew international people working in all aspects of their areas.
So then the subject editors, then they thought, well, okay, then within this wide region, these are some of the things that we should be addressing. Then they went out, and was it a matter of then those people went out and said, okay, now here are the people I'd kind of like to have write entries, and this is what we think we should be dealing with?
Yes, that's the basic. That was the basic construction that we agreed upon. And we said initially, you know, okay, if you had 50 topics under, you know, for example, culture and communication, what would those be? And weigh them. So, you know, if you have entries of 500 words or 2,000 words, you know, how much should each of these be? And that's where the initial organization of the four volumes came into being. But then, of course, there were things that fell in the cracks. I mean, I'm interested in, I do a lot of drumming, hand drumming, and, you know, where does that, it wasn't listed under arts, and yet for centuries, that's been an important activity of women, hand drumming. And so, you know, there were things that we had to add. And then, as the years went on, we added a great many topics because that, you know, we saw we saw, first of all, gaps, and then we also saw emerging important areas of research.
Mm-hmm. It seems like this would be a great opportunity for CD-ROM version multimedia kind of thing. Have you thought about that?
Well, maybe next project down. And indeed, you know, it's been keyed for that possibility. It's been entered in a database with that possibility. But that's a different. It's a slightly different project. This has a very extensive index. It's I think there's something like 30,000 entries in the index. But of course, if it were CD-ROM, that they would be linked in other ways. Uh-huh. So it's another project.
Uh-huh. Our guest in this hour, Focus 580, Sharice Kramer. She is the co-editor, along with Dale Spender, of the Routledge International Encyclopedia of Women. It is a new work. It's now just come out in four volumes with almost 1,000 entries, with contributions from people from the United States and all over the world, dealing with a wide range of subjects. And we just touched on a few of them, things like economics and education and health and women's studies. Questions, comments certainly are welcome if you'd like to call in and talk with our guest. She currently is visiting professor for the Center for the Study of Women in Society at the University of Oregon here in Champaign-Urbana. The number 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. In the process of doing this, were there things that you learned that, even as someone who's been working in the area of feminist scholarship for a long time, that even you did not know previously?
I think on any one page, there are probably 10 things that I didn't know. I thought, you know, I'd been in women's studies for three decades now, and I thought that I knew a bit about things, but I learned a great deal, in good part because it's international, and things that I had assumed that I knew about, I didn't know the international implications, the international aspects.
Well, can you give a specific example of just something that when you read that section, it only did you say, well, I didn't know this before, that you were really impressed by something that you learned?
Yeah. For example, radio. that I have done a lot of research on the radio and women's involvement or not in the U.S. and in the U.K. And I thought that I knew a lot about women's, how women were represented or not, and programming issues from the early 20s on. And then a woman, she's actually from the University of Alaska, wrote an article that took a look at other countries. We know from our work in U.S. and England that it was initially owned and controlled by the military and commercial sectors. And initially there was no interest in having women involved in any of the announcing or the programming. And in fact, in the United States, there wasn't daytime programming because they thought, well, you know, the only people who would have time for it were those housewives. And they didn't see what they might, you know, what interest there might be in broadcasting to them. And so there was initially evening, and very male-dominated. And you know, I've sort of tracked this and how this changed and what happened in World War II when they started having to, employ women as announcers. And all the assumption before, they wouldn't hire women as announcers because they kept saying, well, you know, people won't listen to women's voices, they're too high. And in fact, in England, they even said that the equipment, the radio equipment, couldn't handle women's voices. And of course, all this turned out to be nonsense. They said that initially when they said sent out calls for announcers. They would say, you know, women need apply, you know, so they didn't have to turn them away at the door. Because they said that, for example, people wouldn't listen to news. They wouldn't treat it as serious if it came from a woman. And then during World War II, when they were forced to hire some women announcers, by golly, people started listening to the news and believing it, even when it was announced by women. And so I thought that I knew a lot about this, and I thought that I knew about who was listening. For example, in the United States, women listen more even than men do. On average, in the United States, people listen to 2 hours of radio program each day, but women listen more, in part because radio listening is also a lot done in cars, driving to and from work or shuttling children, you know. So it's estimated to be much higher. The women's listening time is estimated to be much higher than men's. But in developing world, that's not true. And men still own radios in far larger numbers than women and make up the greater share of listeners in other countries. And then I learned about radio listening clubs, rural women in Zimbabwe, and you know, just a great many things that I thought that I knew something about radio listening, but I found I didn't.
Mm. We have a caller to talk with, and I also want to make sure other people listening know they're certainly welcome into the conversation. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455 is the number. We do have also a toll-free line, so if it would be a long-distance call for you, use that number. We'll pay for the call. That's 800-222-9455. First caller here is in Urbana on line number one. Hello.
Hi. Listening to you, I'm reminded of a T-shirt that I have. It's now kind of worn and needs to be updated. It's attributed to you and Paula Treichler. It says, well, feminism is the radical notion that women are people.
Well, that's carried broad now into a encyclopedia.
Can you tell me how much this costs? Is it one volume, multiple volumes? Is it something that the average person like myself might consider adding it to our home library, or is it beyond my reach?
Well, information on that can be found at the Rutledge page, but it is expensive in terms of a single volume. Of course, it's four, in terms of a single work, it's, of course, four volumes. It's $500. By word, it's a pretty big bargain because these are large volumes.
Okay, well, that gives me an idea. I can save for it. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Other questions, comments are welcome. 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. And again, maybe I should introduce again our guest. We're talking this morning with Sherris Krameray. She is the co-editor, along with Dale Spender, of a major new reference work, the Routledge International Encyclopedia of Women. Routledge is the publisher. It is indeed a four-volume set, has a great deal of material, contributions from authors, writers around the world on a wide range of subjects. And so the kind of thing that maybe you might not be able to have on your own bookshelf, but certainly the kind of thing that you should expect to find in the library. And as I said, I expect that the major purchaser of the set probably will be library, so you can look for that coming soon to a library near you. And again, so other questions are welcome. Routledge, I know, is a publisher that has a special interest in publishing women's history.
Mm-hmm.
Was the process of finding somebody who was interested in publishing this work, was that difficult?
One could take a look at the history of this encyclopedia and take a as a case study for what's happened with publishing, I think, in the last dozen years. It started because a publisher came to us and said, what if? Because it would have been a strange thing for us to dream about doing because of the expense of such a large work. But they came to us. However, as publishers started buying up one another, it got caught in this whirlwind, and I think we have had six or seven publishers, and sometimes it has it has just moved, you know, it's been bought and sold by the companies, and we've just sort of moved along with it. But a couple times, it then was just left out of all this negotiation, and we had to find a new publisher. And we were very fortunate. I mean, the last one, we were looking because it had ended up the publisher that we had been in, been with, which had been very supportive, and we'd done a lot of work with them. It ended up being owned by a TV home shopping company. And, you know, they think, well, what, we're doing a one study encyclopedia? And so we contacted Rutledge, and Rutledge was immediately interested because they have done a lot of women's studies works, and they had a very well-established reference section. So we were very, very fortunate in ending up with the press that we ended up with.
Yeah. Well, certainly you pointed something that's that is a serious issue in publishing. We've talked about it, I guess, on previous programs, and that is, well, you go to the bookstore, you go to the library, and you look at the names that are on the spines of the book. There are all these different names. But when you look at, in fact, who owns all of those imprints, you find that over time, a smaller and smaller number of very large companies are controlling most of the publishing. And as that has happened, making money on books has become more and more important to them. And for that reason, it's been really difficult for people who are writing either literary fiction or who are doing something that's really of a high quality of nonfiction nature, books that deal with social issues and political issues and history and biography and science and all those sorts of things. I think it's just getting more and more difficult because the publishers, they want to know how much money they're going to make.
That's right. And we were at one point with a publisher who said, oh, no, we can't add any additional entries because, you know, I would find things, yes, we have to have this. And they would say, oh, no, you know, we're way beyond our budget. We can't do that. And as I say, we were lucky that we ended up where we were because there was no hesitation on their part in adding authors. And one of the things that we started out with more than a decade ago is we wanted to make sure that the contributors got paid, you know, at least an honorarium, that women do so much of this work volunteer. And indeed, most, I think, of the author, most of the authors of the contributions would have been willing to do it for, you know, the cause, for this project. But we were pretty animate with all the publishers that we dealt with that the writers would have to get paid at least, you know, what a man writing an encyclopedia entry would get paid, what the more manly encyclopedias, what their going rate was for their contributors.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go right out and look for myself a manly encyclopedia. Are most of your contributors, I'm looking here at the list of the subject editors, and they do seem to be academic women who make their living as university professors. Are most of the contributors indeed professional academics?
Certainly many of them are. We also have a lot of activists. The Boston's Health Collective, Book Collect, has been very involved with it, and indeed activists from other places. Your question brings up something that was a real big issue when we were beginning, and that was whether we should have biographies of women.
Mm-hmm.
The subtitle of this book is Global Women's Issues and Knowledge, and we wanted to make it clear that what we were dealing with issues and knowledge because, and this was something that Dale Spender felt awful about. She really was determined that we'd have biographies, small sketches of all the women who have been involved with knowledge making. But the women from a number of countries said that, first of all, it'd be enormously difficult to make those decisions, and that some of the people that they would want to include were people who could get in trouble if they were represented in an encyclopedia because they were doing underground work. And so it was on the basis of the advice of women from other countries that we decided to focus on issues and knowledge and not sort of little sketches.
Hmm. Well, that certainly points to an issue that is that we might not fully appreciate here in this country, that I'm sure that there are places around the world where being a feminist literally and figuratively is a crime.
That's right. And but at the same time, we did find women in all these countries who are activists. And while indeed many of the people who wrote are connected to universities, we also have a number of people involved in collectives in various places.
Just going back for a moment to, you talked about the fact that at one point one of the publishers you were dealing with was felt that the project had gotten big enough already, and you were saying to them, well, we need to include more entries, and they said, no, we're, it's already too big. Mm-hmm. Given the fact that it is a big work already, it's four volumes, mm-hmm. Over 1,000 entries, when you're working on a project like that, how do you know when to stop? How do you get yourself to say, okay, I think we've done it, it's time to say, it's finished, let's print it.
Yeah. And of course, if indeed there had been a delay, we would have continued to see topics. But because we did a great deal of cross-referencing, while there are almost 1,000 entries, there are all kinds of cross-listings. And so, indeed, as I say there, I think there are about 30,000 lines in the index. We felt that we have at least mentioned almost every issue one could think of. And I think that that's something that will be a surprise to people as they take a look in the encyclopedia, that there are, you think you know the topics for women's studies, but then, we have all sorts of topics that you don't necessarily associate specifically with women's studies. Someone said, well, do you have car? And we said, well, we certainly have transportation, and cars are are discussed under that. Who's owning them? Who's driving them? Where they are? What differences they have made to rural women? All sorts of issues. And we have travel that's included. So there are, you could look in the index and look under car and certainly find feminist analysis that are related to car.
Mm-hmm. I know have been very involved in it, and other women scholars have been very much involved in exploring women's history, contemporary conditions for women, all things that in the past scholarship, I think you would say scholarship had neglected. And this is not exactly new, but the field of women's history is something that has grown steadily probably over the last, I don't know, maybe 20, 30 years. And scholars have tried to address the fact that in the past, historians would have said, well, what women do, what they have done, it's not that important. And in fact, I think a lot of scholars, historians, have started to look at history very different and have moved away from the quote, great man sort of approach to the idea that says, well, all kinds of people make history, and that maybe some of the most important people were those that whose names didn't come down through the ages, and certainly a lot of them were women. What I wonder if you could say something about where women's history stands right at the moment and how much has been accomplished and what yet you would like to see accomplished.
It's one of the things that we tried to build into the encyclopedia, in that we asked people in writing the entries to include the history, the work on, whether it is Islam or adolescence or quilting or whatever, what the history is, and as much as possible globally, so that in a sense a lot of that material is in these volumes, as well as, of course, the contemporary debates. We try to ask the individuals writing the entries to not include only their own perspectives, but to try to include the debates and the historical debates as well. And so this is, in many senses, a tribute to the years now that we have of women's history, history making in many senses, you know, including the history of history.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons that we were interested in doing the encyclopedia is that we have evidence of about 60 years now of women complaining about the encyclopedias that are out there. They're supposedly the most authoritative sources. And in the 1940s, a woman, a historian, wrote about things that weren't in the Encyclopedia Britannica. And I think one of the things that she pointed out was cooking, you know, cooking. That there was no entry about how that's done, how it has been done, you know, the institution, the rituals, everything, the equipment, that wasn't there. Well, why wasn't it there? I mean, because women weren't involved in determining the categories and in writing those entries.
Well, I think that's a point that's worth suggesting that people at least think about. I suppose any time they look at a reference work, something even as big and as authoritative as we might think of Britannica, and we don't want to pick necessarily on Encyclopedia Britannica, but everything is not in that or in any encyclopedia. And I suppose one has to ask this question, well, whoever sat down to make this, how did they think about what they wanted to include, what was important and what wasn't, and in some cases what they decided not to put in might tell you as much as what they decided to put in.
Yeah, and certainly that's true for ours too. I mean, we're certainly aware that, I mean, how do you do a global encyclopedia anyway? You know that it's going to be inadequate and incomplete. But we really tried to get the advice of people from many places about what entries should be included. So there are some entries here, for example, Siti, the wife, you know, burning of women that is an issue at, in India that isn't as big an issue, certainly in many Western countries. But we got examples of things as we went on. And we also contacted, we went visiting to some of the international women's studies libraries, including one in the Netherlands, and took a look at their indexing system. So we also used the indexing systems in libraries, international libraries, women's libraries, to try to get a sense of what we needed to include that maybe wasn't in our knowledge or even in the knowledge of the people that we'd gathered internationally.
Mm-hmm. We're coming to the point where we have just about 10-12 minutes left in the program. Again, I want to introduce our guest. We're speaking with Sharice Cramray. She is the co-editor of a major new reference work that's just come out, the Routledge International Encyclopedia of Women. It's in four volumes, has close to 1,000 entries contributed by writers from around the world on a wide range of subjects. And it's, if you're interested, the books are available. Chances are probably the place most people will find it is in the library, because it's not inexpensive. But you might want to seek it out. And certainly if your library doesn't have it, you might want to suggest to them that it would be a good thing to add to their collection. Our guest at the moment is visiting professor for the Center for the Study of Women in Society at University of Oregon. And I'm sure people here in Champaign-Urbana will recognize that she was a faculty member of the University of Illinois for some time. Questions are welcome if you'd like to give us a call. 333-9455 is the Champaign-Urbana number. We do also have a toll-free line. Good anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. We have now several callers, so let's start in again here. And for the first caller, I think we'll go to southeastern Illinois, line number four. Hello.
Yes, three questions. One is kind of a comment about the man announcer, sort of what do you call that? Chauvinistic, I guess. But I have low vision, and I get talking books, and also magazines. So I'm talking book forms of magazines. And one thing that has really surprised me is the difference in clarity between a man's voice and a woman's voice. Now, it may be simply the, I mean, all generalizations are false, so this could be simply the some of these that I'm noticing, but some of the women's voices are very difficult to understand, and the women's voices have to be played at a slower speed in order to be comprehensible. I mean, that's just a comment. I have a couple of questions. One of the things that at the very first of the program that intrigued me, and what is hand drumming, and what, why do women do it, and what is that? I don't understand that.
Well, I was giving an example of things that fell through the cracks in the usual topics of economics, education, and so on, the topics that we thought sort of divided up the knowledge of the world. And it turns out that hand drumming was something that used to be associated primarily, drumming used to be associated primarily with women. And I read a book.
Now, when you say drumming, you're talking about pounding on a drum.
Yes. Huh. An old form, I mean, an ancient form of music, of sound. And initially, you know, they used to see on old vases, archaeological digs, they would see a woman, they thought, well, she's holding up a pie or a cake. She's leading a group of people, but she's holding up a pie or a cake. And, you know, now they know that these were drums and that women were very important in rituals and in drumming. And that's kind of knowledge that's been lost. And the woman who wrote the entry on drumming, I said, well, can you also, including the history, but can you also say something about, you know, the girls' drum bands of today? And she said, oh, I can and I will. But she says, you know, that all comes from military and the introduction of stick drumming for military reasons back about the 14th century, and then it became very, very common and popular in the Western world for military, and then it was black jazz players that took up and made the drum sets. And she says, yeah, I'll do this, but you know, her interest was in the older history. Well, this was the history involving women and sound and important rituals that I had no knowledge of before working on this.
But were the drums about the size of tambourines, you said?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And in fact, that, you know, some of them became then tambourines. They inserted the cymbals and so on. But it was some of the drums were hand, and some were used a bone or, you know, as a stick. And shamans, and women and men shamans, but drumming very, very closely associated for the majority of human history with women.
Hmm. Another question. I wondered, you said that some of your the writers of your articles were activists. Since by the very nature an activist is working for a cause and selling, was there any review for objectivity in their articles, or how was, were any articles reviewed, or how was that done?
Well, you know, traditionally, encyclopedia articles have been presented as value-free, mm-hmm. But feminist scholarship, you know, acknowledges the political importance of our lives and the politics of the personal, and so certainly they offer values in this sense, but we're suggesting that all encyclopedias do, that,
oh, yes,
you know, the objectivity, of course, is in, you know, the eye of the beholder,
yeah.
And one of the critiques is made of traditional encyclopedias that they haven't been as inclusive as we wanted to try to be.
Okay, well, thank you.
All right,
thank
let's talk with someone in Urbana here, line number two. Hello.
Yes, what a fascinating show you have, and I wonder if you know if they exist in the Champaign and Urbana libraries.
That is a question that I should have known. If they're just out. I know that the university library has a set, and I just don't know yet. about the public libraries.
Well, maybe I'll call the Urbana Library and encourage them to get it. Does it have your name down as the editor?
Yes, it does. It's Routledge International Encyclopedia of Women. And, yes, it does.
I have a comment for the previous caller, and that is he may find women's voices difficult to understand because he may have spent his whole life listening to men. Though I would suggest that he maybe listen to some women.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for the call. Let's go to Aurora for someone else. This is line one. Hello.
Yes, hi. Good morning. Sorry that I missed most of your program. I had a flat tire, which cut my listening time. I think this is a very good thing that you're doing, and I have three daughters, and I guess I don't know what word to use, but I thought with the liberation, supposedly, of women in the 60s, I thought things would be different, but they aren't, are they?
There's some changes, but certainly an awful lot more, as we all see, to be done.
Well, I'm kind of disappointed, disenchanted, that there wasn't seemingly more done or is being done. Or do you feel, since you're doing this work, that more is being done since the 60s?
Well, I think that this encyclopedia is sort of uplifting a bit in that sense, in that this is based, on, of course, on feminist work, feminist scholarship, and there is an amazing amount that you can read this and you think, yeah, you know, I hadn't thought of it in that way, and yet, you know, this is based on the work that has been done in the last decade. So I think that it both indicates it both indicates the problems and also that there are some changes.
Well, when I think of what the women did to get the vote way back when did that start exactly? It was in the 20s, but when did it really start?
In the 1850s.
And it took that long and that much. I mean, the women almost died for the cause.
Yes.
Being put in jail and force-fed with tubes, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
And yet they still aren't liberated.
Yes, and that's a global issue.
Then are they online? Is there a program that's online that if anybody wants to talk, are you online?
What's happened with computers and the internet and women's use of that is something that we tried to deal with in the encyclopedia and just indicate the ways that this is being used to connect women for conversations, for deliberation, for debates, and for action.
Well, thank you again.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
This last issue is something that I know you and Dale Spender, both, and other women as well, we're very interested in, that is, getting women involved in information technology, and that's really what WITS was all about. What can you say about, particularly when it comes to young women and girls, in what sort of numbers they're getting friendly with computers and exploring the possibilities of computers and internet, both as a means of communication and as a way of gathering and exchanging information.
Yeah, and I learned a great deal about this from women on the campus, the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign campus, because working with the WITS women was one of the major delight of my life, learning a lot and still working with some of those women on various projects. And as I get to the other, I just want to say that this is a global work, but if there is a home base for this encyclopedia, it is that campus, because there are lots of contributors that come from that campus. You know, for example, if you want to look at film criticism, Ramona Curry is there. And as I said, the women in the library Beth Saffron, Sue Searing, and then our topic editors and so on. So there's a lot of work that's been done on this encyclopedia right on that campus, including then the women in WITS and all the work that, all the interest in what's happening with women online. And I think there's a lot that's happening with women online, but globally, you know, the digital divide is not usually described in terms of, for example, if there is a computer in a home, where who has control of that computer and who's using it for what. There, you know, it's called an information revolution, but it's not having the same impact on everyone, certainly. And we try to deal with a lot of those issues, a lot of how women's access and use is different, and for what reasons, you know, what this, how this information revolution has affected people differently, as it always does. Any revolution affects class, gender, you know, has affects people in different ways.
Well, we'll have to leave it at that because we've come to the end of the time. I want to say, Professor Kramer-Ray, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Our guest, Sharis Kramer-Ray, is visiting professor for the Center for the Study of Women in Society at University of Oregon and is the co-editor, along with Dale Spender, of the newly published Routledge International Encyclopedia of Women, now out in 4 volumes. So you might want to look at that. And if it's not in your local library, you tell them that they should have a copy.